Hey, good morning to you. How are you doing? I hope you're well. It's a Tuesday morning. It is, and it's December 3rd, 2019. Are you in good form? You are. It's cold, but not as cold this morning as it has been lately. I hope this is sounding okay. I've run a few tests through it. I'm back using this microphone again, and I hope the distortion issues that I was having yesterday are gone. I think they probably should be. I've done a few trials. I've recorded myself and listened back. A number of you are speaking on the chat there, and you are speculating about the BBC's Panorama programme, which went out last night, which featured an extended conversation with Virginia Roberts Jeffrey, or Jufrey. And you're wondering, well, was it any good? Was it a bombshell programme? Well, not really. I've not got any snippets of it to share with you this morning, and I don't think I will on the radio show later on. It didn't offer any new insights, really, I don't think. We missed maybe the first couple of minutes of it and then switched over to it. I don't think it told us anything that isn't already in the public domain about her and the allegations she's made against this guy Andrew. So it won't be good for him, of course, and for the palace, the royal family, the fact the programme is going out on the national airwaves, on the BBC. But ultimately, some of the commentators this morning who have been asked to give some sort of opinion on it are making a salient point, a fairly good point. What this all boils down to, ultimately, is who does the British public believe? Does it believe Virginia Roberts Jufrey, or does it believe the Duke of York, this guy, Prince Andrew? Look, I've got form when it comes to talking about the royal family and sex abuse, so I'm hardly unbiased in my assessment of it. But it's patently obvious if you watch back his interview with Emily Maitlis on Newsnight a couple of weeks ago that he was lying through his teeth. Looking at her and her body language, am I an expert? No, I'm certainly no expert in body language. But what I have done many, many, many times over the years is I've interviewed many people. And I've interviewed a lot of people whom later on I discovered were being untruthful with me. And I've learned, having conducted probably 1,000 interviews or more, well, far more than 1,000, I've learned to pick up a few signs, you know, as to when somebody is being deceptive and untruthful. And as far as I can tell, Virginia Roberts Jufrey believes exactly what it is that she's been telling people for the last few years. And that's as far as I would go. So it's interesting, right? Thanks, Robert Dean, for telling me the sound is perfect. You're very kind. It's probably not perfect. We're not the BBC here. Well, at least not this live stream. But it's not bad, mate. I appreciate that. Hi to Charlotte Binns in Burnley. So, yeah. We'll have a look at the front pages of the newspapers then. Listen, I've got... I want to give you a heads up. I never, ever, ever like taking any time off. But I've got a very important meeting later on this afternoon, in the middle of the afternoon. I couldn't arrange it for any earlier. I've got a meeting with a solicitor of mine a bit later on about a legal thing that I'm involved in. I'm not in any trouble. It's not about me. It's about a third party. And it might mess around with the radio show later on. I hope it doesn't, because I've got some guests lined up and everything. But I'll let you know as we go through the day. Okay. I've mentioned this going back a few months. Some things happened back in July. Some things were said about me. And some people put my information in the public domain and my phone number and stuff like that, threatened my family. You know this. I've not made a big deal of it at all. But I'm dealing with it. And I have meetings today with people that I hope won't screw up the radio show. Okay? These are kind of last minute things, by the way. So that's just the way it goes. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I'm better rested today than I was yesterday. Very good with Neil Sanders from Neil Sanders Mind Control on the radio show last night. I don't mean very good because the radio show is very good. Neil was very good in synopsizing the documents that Jeremy Corbyn brandished around last week when he claimed that the Conservative Party, Boris Johnson, is prepared to negotiate with the NHS in terms of offering the NHS up to US insurance companies and healthcare providers in the event that the UK leaves the European Union and in the event that a trade deal is negotiated with the US, the NHS would be there and some of it would be up for grabs by private healthcare companies. Now, as you know, ultimately it doesn't matter because it's been happening anyway. NHS procurement has been creepingly, steadily privatised for a number of years. So why it should be all the more horrific that US healthcare companies... Now, I know. Neil Sanders made a very compelling case. He talked about the price of drugs and the price of generic drugs rising exponentially. I get that. That's important. I'm not dismissing that at all. But the NHS has been steadily privatised for a number of years. It's not a new thing. But Neil was good. If you want to check that out, it's on this YouTube channel and the usual podcast, iTunes, Podomatic.com and all the rest of it. Right, let's have a look at the front pages of the newspapers then. If you want to watch that Panorama programme, it'll be available on the BBC iPlayer now. In fact, it would have been available on the BBC iPlayer the moment it finished last night. Alrighty. Okay. Do you know what I've not done? Do you know what I've not done? We're going to have to do it as we go along. I've not actually grabbed the front pages of the UK's daily newspapers. That's a bit strange. And it's very unlike me, so I think I can do it as we go along. Let's do it as we go along, shall we? Shall we? Let's do it as we go along. Okay. Alrighty. So I think we're going to start off with The Guardian today. Here's The Guardian. There you are. Improvise, adapt and overcome is the mantra. Jack would be livid. His death has been used to further an agenda of hate. That's the front page headline on The Guardian. And then PM denounced over response to tragedy. And this is the father of the man, one of the two people. This is Jack Merritt, who was murdered on Friday on London Bridge as he took on Usman Khan, the knife-brandishing Islamist terrorist. And his father has come out very strongly to say that he's written in The Guardian today an opinion piece to say that basically his son wouldn't be happy at all because his son was somebody who believed in tolerance, who believed in love, not hate, and hope, not hate, and challenging divisive rhetoric. So if his son was here today, he'd be properly peeved, so he would, that political capital is being made out of his death. Okay. The Express newspaper then, if we can grab that, let's bring it up. Here's The Express. It is extinguish hatred with his kindness. So it's the same story. Okay. Incredibly moving plea from the father grieving even for son killed in terror attack. That's The Express there. Yeah. Why did I forget to schedule these? And there I said I was properly rested today. I'm a bit better rested. I'm never properly rested. The picture of Jack Levitt's father, by the way, can be found on the front pages, on the front page even of many newspapers today. Also in the Times, 200 extremists face curbs on movement. 200 extremists face curbs on movement. So what's that about? Well, we can have a look inside the Times. We can see it there. 200 extremists face curbs on movement. Well, it's essentially saying that extremists... We were told there were 74 that had been released on the automatic early release system. We were told yesterday they were being monitored urgently. The Times is telling us there's about 200 in total, these people, to keep them under severe surveillance, at least in the immediate time frame. Keep an eye on these guys who they're consorting with, what they're doing, and all the rest of it. That's in the Times today. And that's on the front page of the Times. That is the Times even. I've got to get my teeth in today. So the Metro then didn't really need to grab these front pages, because they really are the same, really. Except for the Metro today does have a picture of Jack Merritt's father, but also leads with Trafficked for Andrew. This is a nod to the BBC Panorama show from last night, which featured that extended interview with Virginia Roberts Dufresne. Also featured comments from other people as well of interest. It might be worth a look, but as I said, don't get too excited in terms of that it had any groundbreaking revelations. It didn't. But if you're following the story with great interest, yeah, do take a look at it. Like I said, BBC iPlayer. Right, so that was the Metro then. Where are we going next? We are going to the Mail. And the Mail goes with the Andrew story. It goes with the Andrew story. Andrew's new TV humiliation is the Mail. Duke's sobbing American accuser tells the BBC that he's a liar. She says he sweated like it was raining at the nightclub. And new photographs show Andrew and Epstein, the paedophile, at Ascot. Okay? That's a story inside the Mail. There it is. Photographs of Andrew, Ghislaine Maxwell, the pimp for Epstein, and Jeffrey Epstein himself. Yeah, the three of them there. That's in the Daily Mail. If you want to read that online, it's free. But there's a lot of annoying ads which keep getting in the way and preventing you from scrolling down the story. It's a pain in the arse. But it's free at dailymail.co.uk. Right? Right. Okay. Still not getting the hang of this. Right, let's get rid of that. Where are we? That's the Mail, yeah. From the Mail, we go to the Telegraph. Now, this is interesting. The Telegraph. This is very interesting. A lot of talk about this morning on the UK's news programmes. And this is about the dossier we mentioned that Corbyn was brandishing around. That Neil Sanders was speaking to me about last night, the dossier that suggests the notes from pre-talks. These aren't trade talks now, remember. These are pre-talks. These are the notes of pre-talks between officials from the United States and officials from the UK about what each country would like to achieve from a future trade deal. The allegations are that the notes, all 450 pages of them, show clearly that the NHS will be on the table. But the Telegraph newspaper is very interested in where the notes came from. The Telegraph. And its headline is, Corbyn's dossier points to the Russians. The Russians. This is extraordinary stuff, this. It really is. As far as I can ascertain, these documents were published on Reddit. This website Reddit, right? That's where that's where the Labour Party picked them up. Now, there was an absolutely car crash, but heated exchange between Sky's Ginger Ninja, Kay Burley, and Labour Party MP, a woman called Laura Pidcock, this morning. Burley kept needling Pidcock to ask her, did she know where the documents came from? Do you know where they came from? Pidcock was very poor under Burley's needling. Pidcock need only have said to Burley, listen, Ginger, the veracity or the authenticity of the documents are not in question. We know this because you've had a number of Tories on defending what is in them. But Pidcock got bogged down, got very flustered. She's not very experienced, you see. Whereas Burley's an old hack. She's an old hand at annoying people and winding them up. You might catch that on Sky, on YouTube. I'll grab some of it maybe if we get to the... I'm hoping we will get to the radio show later, even if it's a bit later than normal. We'll try and get on air. But Burley was needling her and Pidcock didn't do very well. Stuff is on Reddit. But the assumption, not the assumption, the claim being made by the right-wing media this morning, ironically, considering how close Boris Johnson is to Donald Trump, and considering that Trump has been accused of benefiting from Russian interference. Nonsense. There's been no proof offered, of course. But the notion that Corbyn's dossier was put in the public domain by Russians, well, it's a bit dubious, but it's inside the Telegraph today. So, to deflect from what's actually in the documents, yes, the Conservatives and the Conservative press is saying, well, where did they get the documents? Of course, the most important thing is, what do the documents say? Here's the story inside the Telegraph. Labour told to come clean about how it obtained leaked government documents. They were on Reddit. As far as we can understand, Labour didn't have to do any deals with underhanded hackers based in Russia or at the Kremlin. So this is a lot of Comrade Corbyn stuff, right? In the Telegraph. If you want to have a look at it there, I'll leave it on screen there for a minute. It's a load of nonsense, I would venture. All right. Okay. Very interesting that a week ago YouGov polled 100,000 people, and the result of the poll led to a claim that the Conservative Party could win a landslide in the election, which is basically 9 days away. It's a week on Thursday, right? But the polls are narrowing now, and they're narrowing significantly for a number of reasons. Stories in the press about articles that Boris Johnson wrote when he was a journalist. The NHS being sold off to the United States. Anti-Semitism fatigue. I think there is some signs that the public are starting to feel just a little bit of sympathy for Jeremy Corbyn. How do we know this? Well, the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, was at an event last evening. He's a Conservative. And while at the event, he tried to bash Jeremy Corbyn. Well, Hancock was being asked about NHS privatisation, and to deflect away from that, he tried to bash Corbyn for his failure to deal with anti-Semitism. But people in the audience started booing Hancock. These are Conservatives, some of them. They're fed up of it. With a bit of sympathy for old Jeremy. My old pal Jean-Anne Crowley would say, maybe they've over-egged the pudding with respect to the anti-Semitism thing. They do tend to do that, you know. Flog a dead horse to the point where people start to say, can you just give the poor bastard a break? So polling is starting to show now that Labour's on the comeback. This is very like 2017, actually, if you think back. Right? Right. That's the Telegraph there. Yeah. I know. There's also a story in the Telegraph about Anjam Chowdhury. It's on the front page as well. Anjam Chowdhury. Jihadi Daddy. I'm not so sure. I always thought that Chowdhury was working for MI6 or for MI5. Now, those of you who have been with me long enough and remember the Richie Allen radio show going back years will remember me putting that to Anjam Chowdhury several times. One time in one particular interview, I just wouldn't let it go. I said, I believe you're working for the intelligence services. Because I always felt that Chowdhury was a complete buffoon. Smart guy. Legally minded, smart fella. Understood the law very well, having studied law. But Anjam, he might find himself back in the clink. He's been out now for a few months, Anjam. I've tried to reach him. But the terms of his license terms, prohibit him from speaking to anybody in the media, let alone me. Even though I've interviewed him a dozen times over the years. One of the things I liked about Anjam Chowdhury was I had a debate on Spanish radio. I interviewed Tommy Robinson 3 times, Stephen Lennon. The first time I interviewed him and I gave him a bit of a chasing. The second time I interviewed him, he was on. I brought him and Chowdhury on and Chowdhury tied him up in knots. Yaxley Lennon. Robinson wasn't able to deal with Chowdhury. Chowdhury was too smart for him. had to bail Robinson out a couple of times. And the third time I interviewed Lennon, Yaxley Lennon, he hung up on me because he was talking about wife beaters in Islam. And I said, speaking of wife beaters, Tommy, and he hung up. But there's Hanjam, and he might find himself back in Porridge real soon. Doing a bit of bird. Right. Good morning to the chatters. How you doing? Mark Stevenson describes himself as a new fan. Mark, we don't have any fans. We have listeners, mate. Thanks for listening, buddy. He's on the night shift in Scotland. Thanks for finding the show, Mark. And nice to meet you, mate. You must be coming off that night shift fairly soon now. Let's hope you are, pal. Hi to Jacqueline Woolley. How you doing, Jacqueline, in Australia? To everybody else who's live chatting today. The live chat is good, isn't it? You get to talk to everybody else. I wonder about Anjam, you know. I've always wondered about him. Cocabella, pal of mine, whom I've known on social media for some time, she says the Tories are finished. I wonder. It's going to be interesting. The landslide predicted by YouGov. Well, they're drawing back on that, aren't they? Eh? Okay. Let's move on. Where were we? What did we do last? I can't remember which newspaper we did last. What did we do? We did the Telegraph, did we? The Sun, then, describes Jeremy Corbyn. This is the Murdoch press now, of course. And it's in full flow. This week and next week it will be as well. Electioneering on behalf of the Conservative Party. Johnson writes an article. Well, he gives an exclusive interview. Exclusive interview. Makes me laugh. He's doing lots and lots of interviews because it's election time. But he has given an interview to The Sun where he describes Jeremy Corbyn as a security risk. I know. Irony is dead, eh? Irony is dead. You arm and your predecessor arms one of the most despotic regimes on planet Earth, Saudi Arabia, with weapons of mass destruction, knowing that they are going to use them to kill hundreds of thousands of Yemenis. And you know that's going to create destabilization and migration. And you know that's going to present problems for countries elsewhere. And you're calling Corbyn a security risk, a pacifist, an anti-war campaigner his entire life. That's Johnson in The Sun. I don't need to add any more to that, methinks. What else have we got then? Are we going to leave the front pages alone, are we, and get into yeah, we'll leave the front pages alone. That's what we'll do. That's what we'll do. Okay. And we'll have a look at one or two stories inside the papers for the time we have left. Now, it's an amazing thing which I covered on the radio show yesterday. Something I've never seen before or heard kind of anything like it. An amazing thing. The BBC breakfast television programme, it interviewed a man called Commodore Toby Williamson, who is the chief executive of Fishmongers Hall. Now, Fishmongers Hall was hosting the Learning Together event on Friday, where allegedly Usman Khan went postal, strapped some knives to his hands and began a slashathon, an attempt to kill and injure as many people as he could before running halfway down London Bridge and being shot dead after being tackled by brave have-a-go heroes. So the Mail today has focused on one of the heroes of the hour, a man called Lucas. We'll call him Lucas because Commodore Toby called him Lucas. And there's an amazing story. There's Lucas with his girlfriend. Lucas. Top man. There he is, right? And there's Lucas again. And there's Commodore Toby Williamson, who told an unbelievable story yesterday. I'm going to play it for you now without the video, because the BBC hasn't yet published the video of Williamson, and maybe they never will, speaking to BBC Breakfast. I can't get the video of it. I searched YouTube. I tried to download it from the BBC iPlayer, but I couldn't do that. So we're going to hear the audio of Toby Williamson describing what happened at the Fishmongers Hall on Friday. But today you're going to hear it without my narration, my commentary, because I did a bit of a commentary on it yesterday, which if you want to hear that, it's on YouTube. It's on this YouTube channel. It's on the radio show, which is always uploaded. So if you want to hear my silly commentary to it, you can do that. But for now, we'll hear it on its own. And there he is. There's Toby. Toby Williamson, right? Now, for some bloody reason that I can't figure out, I can't hear this while I'm playing it for you, sadly. But I'm going to play it for you. This is the Ballad of Lucas, as told by Toby Williamson. And you might have missed this yesterday. Just listen to this. Try and keep an open mind. Try and imagine. Try and think to yourself, have you ever heard anything like this before in your life? Toby Williamson.
But this is a guy called Lucas. He's the guy who cleans the glasses down in the basement, and that's exactly what he was doing when he hears this scream. The scream is so loud that as a first aider, he makes a choice. He goes towards the trouble. He gets there on the first floor of the building just behind me. And it's pretty clear that there's a bad guy. He's got two knives in his hand. There's blood, there's screaming, there's chaos. Lucas pulls off the wall this long stick. He charges towards the bad guy, and he impacts him on the chest. And there's clearly something here that is protective, and it doesn't make any sort of impact. But he's buying time. He allows others to escape, to move to adjacent rooms. At that point, he's got about a one-minute one-on-one straight combat. This guy, we now know by the name of Khan, he works his way up Lucas's poles, slashing with this knife, and takes five wounds to his left side, and is going to lose some strength on that side. But he's done what he needed to do in the first instance, so two other guys who are part of the charity, one's got a fire extinguisher now, and one's got this narwhal tusk ripped off the wall. They come and join the fight, and it's pretty gruesome. I think the terrorist decided he was outnumbered. He runs for it, he goes down the main staircase, and the next bit of hell is at reception. He can't get out the front door, so he turns to reception when our guy called Gareth, who's the doorman, is pushing the door shut as good as he can, so that Dawn, a yard behind, can get on the telephones, hit the alarms, do exactly as her training is told to do. Khan shifts his position to the cloakroom. The girls there, Alla and Sandra, they have a hell of a time. And then eventually it all comes to a great sort of showdown in the entrance hall. Lucas is back in this point, leading the charge. And Andy's the last guy I introduce here. He's our maintenance man. I'll tell you what, two things. He's a Ministry of Defence ex-policeman, and he's also a pretty cool customer. But when the knife goes to his chest, and you know, kill or open the door is the choice. He pauses for a moment. He's reluctant to spill all this out onto the pavement when members of the public are going to be facing the same problems, but he makes exactly the right choice. The door's opened, out the terrorist falls, and the first one after him is Lucas, shouting at everyone to get out of the way, get back. But I tell you what, members of the public, they just don't do that nowadays. They do what they needed to do. They join in, the man with the fire extinguisher, the man with the narwhal tusk, they're all in there. Lucas is losing strength on his left side at this point, but I tell you what, his job is done. The police are here, and I think you've seen the rest already on camera.
Well, that was Toby Williamson there, and the Ballad of Lucas. There's another version of that. And it's on last night's radio show, and I interject a few times with a few comments. And if you haven't heard it, you might want to hear it. You might not want to hear it. It's a bit childish, But it's kind of amusing. I was kind of speculating last night about, you know, Johnny Cash. If Johnny Cash was alive, can you imagine if Johnny Cash was alive? Or any great country music star. If any of the great folk singers was alive, they'd write the Ballad of Lucas. What's his surname, Lucas? Did we get his surname? I'm not sure I got his surname. But I'm going to imagine that Johnny Cash... first of all, that can't be true, right? There are a number of inconsistencies there. Number one, how did the Commodore see all of this without getting involved himself? Was the Commodore sitting there eating popcorn while this was going on? Or did he feel the urge to get up and help Lucas and Gareth and Anna and all the other brave souls? Crazy. Jean Ann says, ah no, the Ballad of Lucas Hero has a certain ring to it. Johnny Cash. Right. Here we go. Now, Lucas left home at 3:30. Didn't even stop to have a pee. Jumped on the 37 down to London Bridge. Now, the bravest thing that old Lucas did from the basement where he daily hid was chase Jihadi Khan out onto the bridge. Well, he must have fought tougher men, but Lucas really can't remember when. He kicked like a mule while reciting the Holy Quran. But Lucas busted a chair right across his teeth and they crashed through the wall onto the bridge. Oh, Jesus, Mary, and Holy Saint Joseph. Well, he busted a chair right across his teeth. And they crashed through the walls into the bridge with the Commodore chasing him with madness. Fucking madness, huh? Yeah. We have lost our collective skepticism, haven't we, as a nation? Who do we blame for it? Do we blame the media for it? Dan Walker and Louise Minchin were the presenters who interviewed this Toby Williamson, the Commodore. When I hear the Commodore, I think Hyacinth Bouquet and Keeping Up Appearances. The Commodore's coming round! The Commodore! With the Priory! So here's the Commodore. And Dan Walker and Louise Minchin, I know full well, and I've never been a bastard who's ever taken any pleasure in embarrassing people on the radio or the telly. But I'd have stopped him and said, listen, pal, pull the fucking other one, right? Really? You've learned that off by heart, haven't you? Somebody has told you to say that. And you're telling that story in a way that nobody ever speaks like that. Nobody describes anything like that. Nobody. That's why I said on the show last night it sounded like racing commentary. Sounded like he was describing the second lap of Aintree in the Grand National. It's crazy. Fucking crazy. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't make it up off the cuff. No, I had four lines. That's all I had. I had four lines. Now, Lucas left home at 3:30, didn't even stop to have a pee, jumped on the 37 down to London Bridge. Now, the bravest thing old Lucas did from the basement where he daily hid was chase Jihadi Khan out onto the bridge. The rest of it I made up. But I made that up. But I wrote that down for myself. Fuck. Christ. Alrighty. So there's Toby Williamson then. Toby. Oh, Lucas, huh? The Ballad of Lucas. Don't let your friends away with it, you know. If your friends are arguing with you and they say, you know, you're a fool, you're always questioning stuff, you're a fool. Don't let your friends away with it. Play them back the Commodore. Just play that fucking clip for them and say, really, listen to that fucker. He's been, I mean, that's Hollywood stuff, that. He's narrating a silent cartoon or something, you know? Crazy. What else have we got for you today? kicking and a gouging and a mud and the blood and the beer. It's one of the greatest songs of all time, that, A Boy Named Sue. A Boy Named Jihadi Khan. Right, what else have we got today? Not a lot, really. It's 6 minutes past ten and I've loads to do before I even head into town. What else have we got? Peter Oborn has written a brilliant piece in The Guardian today about bias in the BBC. Very good. He points to the fact that the BBC changed footage of Johnson laying a wreath at the cenotaph. He points to the fact that the BBC edited footage of Boris Johnson being laughed at by a Question Time audience. They omitted the laughing. He points to the fact that Andrew Marr allowed Johnson lie profusely on the Andrew Marr show last Sunday and didn't interject to point out that Johnson was lying. And Oborn basically says that the print media has always been pro-conservative. It has been. Apart from the Mirror, the Sun, the Daily Mail, the Telegraph, pretty much always pro-conservative. The Murdoch Press, pro-Tory. Yeah, you could say The Guardian. But The Guardian, traditionally, going back when The Guardian was a better paper than it is now, took more care to be more objective in its coverage. So he says, you know, we expect the print media to support the Tories, but now they've got the BBC working with them as well. And maybe, just maybe, this is one of the reasons why the gap in the polling figures, why last week's figures, which demonstrated that Johnson had a huge lead, maybe that lead is narrowing now. Maybe there is something to the old adage about the British people loving the underdog, maybe. Maybe there is. Maybe there is. Look, you know what I know. It doesn't matter who gets in. It doesn't matter. Whether Jeremy Corbyn gets in, whether Snoop Doggy fucking Dog gets in, whether Grimesy gets in or Stormzy, doesn't matter who gets in, right? We know this. We understand this, right? But the great British public doesn't. Widely doesn't understand this. And maybe they're just a bit fed up of Corbyn bashing. And Corbyn, however snooty he might come across, and I find him fucking obnoxious, to be honest, you know, condescending and smug, you know, that sneering fucking contempt that people like Corbyn have for people who disagree with them. The fact is he's been bashed from pillar to post by the press in this country and the television media, the television news media, hammered. And I think people are like, hang on a second. Marry to that the fact that people do like nationalising the rail. They do like that idea. They do like re-nationalising public utilities. They do like that. Polling shows that. Even YouGov last week said, yes, the public do broadly support the nationalisation of public services. Right, so you add all that, the Corbyn bashing, and the lead is closing. Be very interesting. They say a week is a long time in politics. That doesn't hold any water anymore, because that saying entered our consciousness way before the advent of social media. Now 5 fucking minutes is a long time in politics, because anything can happen, and when it does happen, it doesn't take 2 days to get to a newspaper or a day to get in front of people. It happens like that. Bang, it's on Twitter. Bang, it's on Instagram. Bang, it's on Facebook, right? So Corbyn is, he's closing, old Jezza. Yeah. I'm going to finish with this today. This person is batshit fucking crazy. I had a few Twitter exchanges with this person. They were very cordial. And then she deleted me. Or fucking blocked me. Christy Elan Kane has been campaigning for 25 years that we have an X option on passports. An X option. The X option on passports. So you have male, female, and the X gender neutral. This Christy Elan Kane. Interesting story there. I did a monologue about Christy Elon Kane, where I wasn't, where I had a good laugh at the whole notion. And yeah, I might have suggested that Christy Elon Kane is batshit crazy. Fair enough. But that's as far as I went. I don't know the person to be really personal about her. Right? Born a woman. Born with a vagina. And a clitoris. Or a clitoris. And a vulva. A vulva. Wonder did anybody at Volvo years ago say, maybe Volvo is not the best fucking name for our car, you know? Obviously not. So, it's a woman. And anyway, long story short, this will make it... I'm not bashing David. It's going to sound like I'm bashing David Icke, and I've never bashed David Icke. But this made me laugh. DavidIcke.com, when my program was broadcast on DavidIcke.com, until I stopped it, they would share my monologues and my interviews on DavidIcke.com. So my monologue about Christy was shared the following day on DavidIcke.com. There was nothing in it that was actionable. Nothing. I basically had a good fucking laugh at Christy Elon Kane and the madness of people like her, right? And the silliness of it all. I went up on DavidIcke.com. The following day or the day after, David phoned me and said they were taking it down because this person threatened DavidIcke.com with litigation. And I said, and you're taking it down? And he said, yeah. And I went, all right, fair enough. That's right. Back in the day. Of course, I left it on YouTube. And I haven't been sued by Christy batshit fucking crazy Elon Kane. Fucking lunatic. No such thing as fucking gender neutral. It's madness. And fucking crazies like this want us to normalise or legitimise their madness. By saying, yeah, let's have the X option on the passport for your human rights. You fucking nutcase, you lunatic. Right? No such thing. There's no such thing. Male, female, that's it. I know. Some people have been born with male and female sex organs. I know. It's crazy. And the fact that she's back at the fucking High Court again today to try and make this the law, and that we're even talking about it, you know? Crazy times. Not criticising David at all. I had it out with him at the time. I said, I can't really fucking believe you're going to delete the video from DavidIcke.com. But if you're worried about getting sued by this person, fair enough. But I know far more about the law and the media than David Icke ever knew or ever will know. And libel. At the time when I said, I'm telling you, there's nothing libelous about the monologue. I am lampooning, ridiculing and mocking this fucking lunatic. In it. That's all I'm doing. Haven't accused the person of doing anything wrong or illegal. Laughing at them. Because they deserve to be laughed at. These people are not freaks because of the way they look. Nobody is. They're not freaks because of their sexuality. Nobody is a freak because of their sexual orientation or their religious denomination. You're a freak when you fucking think the world has to fucking revolve around you. No, dickhead. No, it doesn't. We're not going to put the X option on the passports, you fucking nutjob. Because there are only two genders, male and female. And they are absolutely linked to your sex, like it or not. You are born with a minge, you're a woman. Born with a cock, you're a man. That's the fucking end of it. I'm sick of these people. Rant over. I'll keep you posted during the day. I know this particular person keeps a close eye on what's said about her in the media. So I wonder, will I be hearing from supporters later on? Hate speech, it's hate. No, it's not hate speech. I don't hate anybody. I don't know this person. I don't hate her. She prefers to be referred to as they or them. Fuck off! They or them is the plural. We're not having this lunacy. I'm not having it. I'm not allowing it. My world is fucking crazy enough without pandering to these loons. These loons refer to me as they or them. I will in my fucking arse, like. Crazy bastards. Huh? Hate speech. No such fucking thing. I don't hate anybody. I hate the fact that they are tolerated. That millions of fucking pounds is wasted going to the High Court to deal with this nutter. Instead of just saying, sorry, love, fuck off. That's how it should go. I'm submitting some papers for High Court. Fuck off. Male, female, make a fucking choice. You can be whatever you want. Nobody cares anymore. You can self-identify. So pick one. We'll go with that. Anyway. That's it. I'll keep you posted about the radio show. I'm having to unhide your comments, you know. Stop swearing. Jesus. Okay, right, that's it. 17 minutes past 10. I've got to go. Have a good rest of your Tuesday. And we'll speak one way or the other later on. Bye from me.